Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 729, interview with Daniel Hopsicker, Strange Doings South of the Border. This program is being recorded on November 27th of the year 2010, and once again, it's my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves Daniel Hopsicker, the author of Welcome to Terrorland, Barry and the Boys, numerous articles on the madcowprod.com, and most recently producer and editor of New American Drug Lords, a video about the intelligence community's involvement in the drug trade, specifically elements of our own intelligence agency's involvement in the drug trade that I think will help to clarify those people who have been following the episodic presentation of Daniel's investigative pieces on his website. Daniel, there's a characteristically long-winded introduction. Welcome back.
Hey, good to be with you, bud.
All righty. Now, you've been blazing trails following the intelligence community-connected drug traffic through which Mohammed Atta and some of the 9/11 hijackers infiltrated, and which has been involved in all sorts of foul doings in all sorts of places. Currently, the president of Venezuela, Hugo Chavez, who is ranged as an enemy of sorts of the United States, is apparently complicit to an extent with some of the flights that have been going in and out of there, and yet at the same time, we also see that the drug trafficking elements associated with Chavez are also working both sides of the street with regard to our own drug apparatus as well. And so that brings us to a very strange impasse. Daniel, there's a piece up on the website on madcowprod.com now about the curious handling of Michael Brassington and some of the fallout from the Teterboro episode. My understanding is that you have a piece waiting in the wings in which we're going to be hearing about, among other things, a name that will be very familiar to veteran listeners to this program, the Free Congress Foundation, and some goings-on down in Caracas, Venezuela. Are you in a position to clue us in on any of that?
I'm not, frankly, dude, because I don't have the information at hand at the moment that you referenced.
Oh, okay. All right. So we'll defer that then to a future discussion. Now, with regard to what's going on down at Huffman Aviation and related areas, obviously we've been looking at intelligence-connected drug traffic that is being sponsored by elements of our own government. I like the term elements because there are other elements that do oppose it, but they just, in the end, just can't muster the firepower because the political and economic weight is clearly on the side of the pro-drug elements.
Well, you know, let's stick with Waleed Mackled.
Yeah.
Because that's the biggest story in Latin America right now.
And this is the gentleman's full name, Waleed Mackled Garcia,
yeah,
of Syrian/Lebanese extraction, but obviously operating in Latin America.
I refuse to use these three names in Spanish, whatever the patronyms. Okay, I mean, a lot of these guys have five damn names.
Yep.
Okay, and I think, well, you know, if I can get by with Daniel Hopsicker, he can get by with Waleed Mackled. Okay.
Yep. His friends call him Wally, by the way.
Do they really?
That's a joke. I have no idea.
He's known as the Turk or the Arab.
Yeah. Yep.
So here's the deal. They're calling him one of the two or three biggest kingpins in the world, accusing him of being associated with Chavez, which he was until 3 years ago, and accusing him of funneling cocaine to Al-Qaeda in Africa, which is untrue. In the indictment and the affidavit that goes with it, you see things like on or about April 11th, 2006, which is when the 5.5 tons came on, Waleed Mackled coordinated the transportation to Mexico of the cocaine, of the 5.5 tons. And then in the next subparagraph, it says, on or about May 10th, 2009, other co-conspirators, not named as defendants, herein flew an airplane loaded with the cocaine destined for the U.S., okay? Other co-conspirators not named as defendants. Who are these folks? These are the folks that own the cocaine. These are the folks that own the plane. And these are the folks that were running it up to the U.S. Waleed Mackled, poor sod that he is, all he was doing was paying off people at an airport in Venezuela so they could transship it, okay? So he's got a very real claim there. Now, in the indictment, they reference two separate incidents. The one we've been talking about, the 5.5 tons of cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is the one I want to talk about now. Because the thing that struck me about the second one, which was only 2 tons of cocaine, he paid off people at the airport again to let a Jetstream 32, which we've seen plenty of with Wally Hilliard, fly from Venezuela to Honduras, where it crashed short of a runway on an island, on the island of Utila in the Honduran Bay Islands. Well, immediately, what this set off raised an alert, okay, with me, because I'd written Barry and the Boys. And Barry Seal, who was connected with the CIA his entire life, spent 9 months in jail in 1980, after being arrested in Honduras, in the Bay Islands, okay, with a load of cocaine on its way to the U.S. So I had to ask myself, how does a guy connected with the CIA get busted in Honduras, which is an American dependency and was later called by an ambassador to Honduras. Actually, it was someone on Kerry's Iran-Contra Committee called the USS Honduras. Honduras became and is today what's known as the trampoline, okay? A twin-engine plane, if you look at any map or globe, a twin-engine plane coming from Colombia to the U.S. needs to stop somewhere halfway in between and refuel. And they're, you know, thus the trampoline. The planes would land and refuel and do land and refuel in Honduras before bouncing up away to the U.S. So we got Barry Seal busted in Honduras, and yet I'm aware that he's working with the CIA, and I go, what was up with that? You know, how did that possibly happen? And then I became aware, and this is gonna relate exactly to Waleed Maclid's plane getting caught down there. Barry paid off the wrong people, and in between the time he paid them off, the generals in Honduras, and the time he got his plane was busted, there was a coup, and General Paz Garcia was in, but the guy that Barry had paid off, General Alberto Melgar, was out. So he had neglected to pay off people who he didn't know were going to be running the country, and a comic opera ensued.
In other words, basically, he paid off the leaders of the then Honduran government. However, after a military coup, they were no longer the leaders of the government. So basically, he had placed his bet on the wrong horse.
It was an honest mistake.
Well, I don't fault him. He was a businessman, you know. So
that's probably true.
I mean, how could anybody fault any honest businessman for bribing the wrong head of state in order to bring one's narcotic shipments in?
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Anybody can make a mistake like that.
So now, the whole time, while this is going on, okay, well, I don't want to get off the case. I don't want to mention Juan Mata Ballesteros, but I will because I already have. He was being protected in Honduras and living in Honduras at the time, and he was responsible, working with the Cali cartel, for the vast majority of cocaine that came into the U.S., and you barely ever heard his name. He got busted back in 1970. This guy was so ahead of the curve. Mata Ballesteros got busted at an airport in Washington, D.C., with 50 kilos of cocaine, and was released. He was the CIA's guy down there. So Barry Seal spends 9 months, and he's busted on the Bay Islands, which is where Wally Maclid's jet stream with a couple tons of cocaine gets busted. So I begin to look, well, what's going on in Honduras when Wally Maclid's plane got busted? It was May 8th. Actually, it was May 10th, 2009, that the plane went down and was caught. Right in the middle of the coup that overturned the elected president of Honduras at the time and put in the people in power now. And so immediately now you can begin to see how, just following the threads of the drug trade, provide kind of a map to the secret history of our life and times, which we aren't allowed to, which we aren't supposed to understand. Now it looks to me very much like the CIA was behind the coup against the elected president, who had a deal. He was a good buddy of Chavez's, right? So Wally Macklin is innocently flying his planes to where they already always went in Honduras to refuel, and all of a sudden the generals there go, nobody, you know, we got something going on here. You know, it was like 25 days. Actually, it was the day before the plane got busted. There had been a massive, and this is more Honduras, you know, history than you're ever going to need. There had been a massive demonstration in Tegucigalpa, the capital, by forces allied with the duly elected president, who had called for a referendum, to put together a new constitution that would, you know, provide more land and, you know, blah 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 blah. Okay. When the Supreme Court in Honduras says no, you can't do that, his forces, the president's forces, took to the street in several hundreds of thousands and fought pitch battles with the military. So it was on in Honduras the next day when Wally Macklin's plane went to land and refuel on the island of Utila, where his planes had been landing and refueling. Now, when you're trying to be a journalist and follow this stuff, it's important to confirm assertions made by like the DEA, for example. And here's one of the things I'm on about. I mean, when the DEA announced Al-Qaeda in Africa had a pipeline to Hugo Chavez, okay? You know, that would have been a big story if anyone here cared about foreign policy, and we don't. Instead, what happened, and you can look this up on the internet, there were 40 different headlines from 40 different newspapers, and it was all written by one guy at the AP. In other words, when something happens in this country, it's not as if, like, reporters from, like, a half a dozen newspapers check out what's being said, okay? Certainly in this case, which is interesting, and affects how our money's being spent, you'd think that there'd be more than one guy. There wasn't. One reporter at the AP, and bless his heart, he works on lots of stuff, and didn't check a single claim from these people. Didn't check on a single claim.
By the way, very briefly, one of the things that has affected the journalistic coverage, which has always been badly skewed, anybody that's studied American history, you know, the Kennedy assassination, which we've both investigated being a salient example, knows that the fix can always be in on any national security-related or big corporate-related investigation. But in recent years, the drive to make newspapers more profitable in the stock market, plus competition from the Internet, has led to staff cutting, and that means fewer reporters, so increasingly newspapers are just taking wire service feed and reaccessing it. So if in that context, one well-placed AP guy could very easily become the expert du jour for the American journalistic community as a whole, although often just simply an appointed expert with connections like Gerald Posner, who became the naysayer on after the JFK movie brought the Kennedy assassination back to people's attention. Then Gerald Posner was there every place to put the whammy on the investigation, you know, on people's interest in that case. So it's not a new phenomenon, but the Internet age has drastically accelerated that by putting pressure on newspapers to compete and be profitable.
Right. So here's what we have. We have the U.S. claiming that this Chavez allied guy is a king among kingpins,
mm-hmm.
responsible for the 5.5 tons of cocaine on DC-9 from St. Petersburg. Then in the affidavit it says clearly he wasn't responsible for either the plane or the cocaine. He was only responsible for paying off people in Venezuela so the plane could land and take off. And then they have then they're claiming that this guy is also allied with Chavez, is also pumping cocaine through a pipeline across the Atlantic to West Africa, where it's being picked up by Al-Qaeda in Africa and run up to Europe. And as we've already talked about, that claim, the two instances they cite in that claim are ridiculous. The pilot and 5.5 tons of cocaine is the guy that they point to his arrest in Guinea-Bissau, and he was released, and more importantly, the plane he flew in on was from Fort Lauderdale Executive Airport, not necessarily the heartland of Al Qaeda, is it?
Not necessarily. That would appear to be Huffman Aviation. I mean, that's a slight joke, but obviously, we should very briefly, veteran listeners to this program are familiar with this, but Al-Qaeda and all of the things that are attendant on September 11th broke upon the American political consciousness from pretty much ground zero. I mean, people had no idea basically what it was. Al-Qaeda, like other organizations such as Palestinian Islamic Jihad, Hamas, is an outgrowth of an organization called the Muslim Brotherhood, which is an Islamic fascist organization that was allied with the Axis in World War II and that throughout the Cold War and to this day has been utilized by elements of State Department, elements of CIA, for anti-communism during the Cold War. Now, element according to a number of texts, the Muslim Brotherhood, which is primarily Sunni, is being recruited or is still being utilized by some elements of intelligence and state to counter Shia Islamic fascism and terrorism. So when we're talking about Al-Qaeda, it's an outgrowth of the Muslim Brotherhood, the parent organization of the Afghan Mujahideen, but an organization that it's the average American thinks of it as, quote, left, unquote. It's actually an Islamic fascist organization with long-standing ties to not just U.S. intelligence, but German and British intelligence. But it's a far-right wing, long-standing tool of various intelligence services.
Yeah, it's blowback.
Yeah,
Al-Qaeda literally means the base,
mm-hmm.
and it was a database of Afghan fighters, of Arabs mm-hmm. From around the world, or Muslims from around the world, that fought with arms purchased by us against to give the Soviets a black eye.
And the director of it, we should never lose sight, too, that the director of the Afghan Mujahideen effort was the elder George Bush. I mean, he was in charge of that op.
You can certainly fault. I'm not a person that believes that, you know, everything that goes wrong in the world is the CIA's responsibility. You know, it can be traced to the CIA.
Absolutely.
And I also think it's borders on being racist to think that we are so powerful that someone else couldn't take a shot at us.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it absolutely is racist and culturally chauvinistic.
Exactly.
Yep.
Since 1973, we have seen the greatest transfer of wealth in the history of the world from the Western world to Saudi Arabia and in the Middle East, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The greatest transfer of wealth in the history of the world. So why wouldn't they think, now we have all this money, let's take a shot? I mean, it certainly appears to me that the elements of the Saudi Arabian government were involved in the 9/11 attack, but and it appears that way to Bob Graham, Senator Bob Graham, who led the Intelligence Committee investigation. On the other hand, and I have never told anybody this, I'll tell you, I've got information that Senator Bob Graham's dairy farm in Florida was used. They flew in there dropping off drugs in the 70s.
Well, the Graham family has long-standing ties to the intelligence community. It's the same general family as Catherine Graham, the late Catherine Graham of the Washington Post, and their intelligence connections are a matter of record.
So, you know, it just goes to show. Let me tell you, and this is not off the subject, but it's not on Waleed Mackled that we're in Hugo Chavez the way we're talking about. Last Sunday night, I turned on the news, the network news. Okay, I'm guilty of watching the network news, and one of my least favorite newscasters, Lester Holt, is reporting from Afghanistan. Now, I've got nothing against Lester Holt being black. I have something against Lester Holt because he just looks stupid as a rock when he's on TV. That's neither here nor there. He comes on television, and this is the lead to the show. He announces that he's in Afghanistan. That a just released government announcement is a major, could be a major turning point in the war in Afghanistan. Okay, well, I'll watch. You know, the U.S. has just released information that appears to be a major turning point in the war in Afghanistan. And what is it? Lester Holt says there is now a plan to pull all American combat troops out of Afghanistan by 2014. Wow. In just 4 more years? I mean, imagine the way that story should have been put together. The U.S. announced today that we are going to be at war in Afghanistan for another 4 damn years. Okay?
Yeah, well, the war in Afghanistan is fascinating because it is one that was lost, one could say. Certainly, it was not addressed properly.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. We invaded Iraq, and then the Afghan war. That's beyond the scope of this interview here, because we have two minutes of time.
We put less troops in Afghanistan, where the attack on New York came from,
mm-hmm.
than there are police in New York City.
Yeah, no, it was botched, to put it mildly.
It's a national scandal. I mean, to anyone who lost a relative, to anyone had any feeling for 2,700 poor dumb people who were stirring coffee made into their coffee on a bright September morning, and the next thing they knew, they were jumping out of windows. To the memory of those people, that George Bush didn't think enough of them to go and get the guy supposedly responsible, who appears to. I mean, you know, I don't think you can claim that Osama bin Laden didn't order that attack. I mean, he claimed he had. I mean, it's one of the few things that the U.S. government and Osama bin Laden have ever agreed on, is that Osama bin Laden was responsible for the 9/11 attack. Anyway, that's so just in the way they play. I mean, they announced last Sunday like it was like, thank God for this. We're going to pull U.S. combat troops out in another 4 years. And then Lester adds insult to injury when he hastens to add, but that's if all goes well.
Yeah, no, but you know, there are times when the current journalistic coverage can become unintentional comedy. But you know, in terms of complicity in September 11th, I just briefly want to toss this out. It's been talked about at great length on these broadcasts for years. But you know, in the initial aftermath of September 11th, they wanted to find out about how to interdict terror financing. When another author whose work is published by Tryon Day, who published Welcome to Terrorland, and also Barry and the Boys, no?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is John Loftus, who I hope to interview again in the immediate future. And he, along with some other, he has a military and intelligence and Justice Department background, and he put together a bunch of investigators, and they basically helped to bust, they forced the FBI and the Treasury Department to bust the largest Islamic terror funding apparatus in history in the United States, and it heavily overlapped not only Saudi organizations and the Muslim Brotherhood, but elements associated with the Bush administration. And on October 4th of 2002, the anniversary of Martin Luther King's assassination, a guy named Talat Altman, who was a director of Hurricane Energy, close personal friend of George Bush's, and a guy who gave the Muslim benediction at the Republican convention in 2000, interceded on behalf of the individuals and institutions who got busted for financing terror, including Al-Qaeda and Hamas. And then the FBI and CIA began following people like John Loftus and Rita Katz and the other investigators who precipitated the investigation. And this is on the public record, sort of the Wall Street Journal.
Believe me, I totally understand that. I mean, and they're still there in Florida.
Oh, and one of the things that ties us directly to your research, too, is that SECO, which is the holding company for the Saudi bin Laden group, their aviation subsidiary was training their pilots down at Little Huffman Aviation. So that's how the big corporate world of the bin Laden and Bush families focuses down, right down to sleepy little Venice, Florida, and tiny little Huffman Aviation. And little old Daniel Hopsicker nosing around down there.
I was so outraged by the terrorist network that was still the Sammy L. Arion connected to terrorist network still visible
mm-hmm.
in Southwest Florida.
Yep.
I can't tell you. I mean, and the word I got from someone else who was outraged and was in a position to know was that the Saudis have got a pass for 9/11.
Oh, absolutely.
That the sensitivity of our relationship with the Saudis, read the sensitivity of the elite that does business with the Saudis, precluded our bringing them to justice, or elements of that government to justice, for the September 11th attack. That was pretty much proven when there were 29 blank pages. The United States Congress, one of the three co-equal branches of the government, went to investigate the 9/11 attack. And in their final report, there's 29 blank pages having to do with Saudi involvement. I remember going out to San Diego. I went out because one of my best friends in Newport Beach died. I went out to his funeral, because there I was. I thought, well, I'm going to take a little trip down to San Diego and spend a couple days, because the most intriguing uninvestigated element of 9/11 occurred was involved two of the 19 hijackers who had lived in the home of an FBI informant, and the FBI informant had never told his FBI handler, who incidentally was assigned to counterterrorism, that he had housed these two individuals. So I go down to San Diego, and I'm looking.
Dan, just let me very quickly interject. We're almost out of time here.
Okay,
try to sum it up. Yeah.
The guy in San Diego, Abu Sattar Sheikh, that is, Abu Sattar Sheikh was not his real name. They said he was a retired professor at San Diego State. He'd never been to San Diego State. He'd never taught a thing in his life. The Kennedy assassination was investigated better than that. I mean, it's just amazing. It just blows my mind. Anyway, I'm going to be doing a series of stories this next week called from Charlotte to Caracas. The St. Pete drug plant is still making, and pointing to who is being held responsible and who is not, and who is not being held responsible includes major banks that were laundering the drug money, including J.P. Morgan Chase.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Boom. There you go.
All right. It's going to be interesting to see, too, how some of these insider trading scandals, I'm not saying it will necessarily, but I wonder when you start getting into the world of corrupt big finance, which is largely redundant, I wonder if maybe some of these insider trading scandals that are getting investigated might ultimately dovetail with some of these narcotics investigations. We shall see, however. Daniel, your website, tell people what's there and where they can find it.
Hey, madcowprod.com. Dave, let me give a shout out to your listeners. I'm the furthest thing from a decent webmaster, and I'm trying to integrate a blog into my website so that I can do something every day. If anyone out there is at all sympathetic to that and knows what they're doing, please send an email to me from my site. I could use a little help.
And this is the Silicon Valley where this is being recorded, so let's hope that some blog-capable people can be of assistance to Daniel Hopsicker, because that's a contribution you can make, and it's one well worth making. We have been visiting with Daniel Hopsicker, author of Welcome to Terrorland, Barry and the Boys, and the kingpin of the madcowprod.com website. This concludes Side 2 for the record, program number 729, interview with Daniel Hopsicker, Strange Doings South of the Border. For Daniel Hopsicker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening. Thank you.